Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Woo woo! Good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Hope your week is off to a great start. Hope you guys are having a great start to your morning. How are you guys doing this morning, fellas?
We are doing, oh, I can speak for myself. I'm doing good.
Actually doing better than I was last Monday. Let's put it that way.
Why? Why is this a better Monday, Key?
Because we continue to get closer and closer to sports. So every time that a week goes by, I feel better as we're getting closer. Not necessarily to the end of everything, but getting closer to sports coming back in. Got to have some hope. Now that the last dance is completely over with, I don't want to go back and start all over those episodes and come all the way back to 10. So I got to have hope that promise that things are starting to shake up. Commissioners are speaking to different groups, focus groups. You have different ownership groups speaking to each other. You have the player PAs talking to the commissioners and ownership groups. So a lot of chatter that's going on around professional sports to figure out how to get people back in. The Lakers are in their building. The NFL is going to open up buildings at a minimum capacity, reduce capacity for employees to go inside the building. So you start things a little bit different now.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you put it out like that, because when you said it was a better weekend or a better Monday than a Monday ago, I'm thinking, no, not really, because we're done with The Last Dance. We got through all 10 episodes of it. We saw 9 and 10 last night, and it ended like we knew it was going to end, with Michael Jordan hitting the shot with the flu game, or I guess it's the bad pizza game now. We'll have to relabel that, but it lived up to all of the hype, guys. It lived up to exactly what we were hoping. And I do have a little Last Dance hangover this morning, because I want more. It was exactly what we needed, exactly when we needed it. It's just too bad that it's over finally.
Well, I think when you look at it.
But now you get to rewatch it.
I don't want to rewatch it, though. I'm done.
Not for a while, at least.
Yeah, I'm done with it now. I mean, like I said earlier on, a couple weeks ago, we were all wondering who. And I said his kids are going to appear in the last two episodes. And guess what? His kids appeared in the last two episodes. Didn't get a lot out of them. But you figured, when I asked Wilbon this, and Wilbon said, oh, no, Michael's really private. I said, no, his kids are going to appear in it, because you have to. You know, you have to. And in a lot of the story was so interesting in the last two episodes, because you got to kind of see some things, whether it was the pizza versus the flu, which at the end of the day, they both feel the same. If you ever have food poisoning, it's not fun, but it usually lasts, you know, 24 hours and it's gone. So it's kind of the same thing. And you know, they put a lot of heavy mustard on it to drum it up to make you think it was something more than what it was. It just, you know, I didn't know that about Steve Kerr. I didn't know that his dad was murdered. Cut down. I had no idea about that. That was the first time. I mean, I've never heard that story before. Have you guys?
Yeah, I knew it.
It's been around for a long time.
Go ahead, LZ. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I was just saying it's been around for a long time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know. I followed Steve Kerr either.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just one of those stories that, you know, as you're reporting around the NBA, you just kind of hear. And it helps informs your understanding as to why Steve Kerr, along with Greg Popovich, are two of the more vocal coaches when it comes to social issues and political issues.
Absolutely, got it.
They have some teeth in that, some skin in that game.
Yeah.
But I was really happy to see Michael include that, or allow the green light to include that aspect of it, because it certainly help me understand why they opted to put Steve Kerr on the cover as opposed to Tony Kukoc, who, from a basketball perspective, was just more important to that third run, especially, you know, talk about 98. You know, this is the guy who's the sixth man of the year. This is the guy who's the best player in all of Europe at one point. So a lot of us were wondering why wasn't Tony Kukoc on the cover. But when you see the way they decided to handle Steve Kerr's story, you understand why they decided to do that.
Were you guys surprised at the fact that Michael and Steve Kerr never spoke about that to one another? Because I would imagine that that is something, you know, that there's probably not a ton of common ground between those two guys, other than the fact that they're both basketball players. But you got one guy who is the ultimate role player, and then you got the other guy that's the GOAT. So the basketball thing, they're kind of going at it at a different way. But that they both lost their fathers to violence, and yet they never spoke about it, I thought was really interesting, because obviously you're going to spend some time together, and maybe Michael just didn't open up like that to anybody else, because I've heard Steve Kerr discuss the death of his father before. I know Michael talked about it at the time, but you would think with all the time together that that never came up between those two guys. I was surprised by that.
Well, I would think that, and look, I don't know, Michael said, I mean, Steve said it never happened, but I would think at the time, you know, you're looking at it and you're saying to yourself, okay, when it happened, Steve Kerr was not part of the Bulls.
No, he's in college.
He was in college. So it's hard to approach somebody. You know, it's one of those deals where I'm not going to bring it up. Michael Jordan's not bringing it up. So why would I approach him? What am I going to say? Man, I feel bad for you. You lost your dad the same way I did. Man, you're not going to really do that. You know, when you just try to figure out how to stay on the team. You know what I'm saying? Like, because Michael's not bringing it up to you. So if Michael opened up the door, whichever one you want to crawl through, then at the end of the day, that conversation now starts. But I'm certainly not going to approach Travis and say, man, Travis, I'm sorry that this happened to you and it happened to me too. Because I don't know where that wound stands with you. So mm-hmm. You kind of just, you know. Let's say Steve Jackson. If Phil Jackson approached Steve Kerr and said to him, or Michael, and said to Michael, hey, you know, Steve's dad was murdered. You should probably sit down and talk to him. It'd be a little bit of therapy for you guys. Then maybe Michael approaches it, or vice versa. Hey, Steve, you know, it'd be good to talk to Michael to understand how he dealt with the loss of his dad. Mm-hmm. And now Steve approaches it. But just to be sitting on a training table one day and say, hey, man, you know, it won't go. It can't go like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously an incredibly difficult situation to have, but I was struck by the fact that it never happened in their time together. There was a whole bunch of things in the yesterday. The flu game, we got a ton of attention on that. Turns out it was a tainted pizza, according to Jim Grover.
Yeah, but I was going to let you gloat about that later on, LZ. I didn't want to use that at the top.
Go
of
ahead
the
and gloat about it right now, LZ.
It's not a gloat. I just wanted to hear the story. And I thought the story would have been a lot more humorous. That's why I was really pushing for it, because, you know, so many years have passed since then. You would have thought the notion of Michael ate a bad piece of pizza would have been hilarious at this point. But nobody found it funny, or at least we didn't capture any funny moments. And I was kind of bummed by that, because I already knew the bones of the story. I mean, what I wanted was like a humorous reflection on it. But instead, it's like everyone had like this real earnest.
Well, it's hard though, LZ, because he dropped what, 38?
Something like that.
Yeah,
like
so
that,
35, he dropped in the 30s, right? Let's say he had a bad game. Then you can attack him and go at him. But when you drop 30-something, you cold blooded. Ain't nothing. I don't care if it's the flu.
Man. You can still clown somebody to have a good game.
No, because at the end of the day, what you gonna say? Oh man, you can't even eat no pizza. I mean, they really not. If he had a bad game and they still won, you can go at him 20 years later. 20 years later, it's hard to, when a dude just dropped 30 something. It's hard.
But it's here's hard. The part I don't. Here's the part I don't get. If it's what did they say? It's 10:30 at night or whatever it is.
Damn, Michael
gets
hungry. My dude, B. Russ, man. He can't catch a break.
We'll get to Brian Russell in a minute. That's coming up in a second. But if five guys show up at your hotel room door with a pizza, don't you know something's up? I mean, it takes exactly one guy to deliver a pizza, and five guys are like, Hey, we're here to deliver the pizza.
Well, it don't,
there is,
just
there's
five guys,
humor
you know.
In this story. There's legitimate humor in this story. The man, fact they that they didn't go there,
they trying
it,
to get
it's
a,
sad.
They just trying to get a close-up look at the great one, man. That's all. They want to see Michael Jordan. Pizza dude, you know, it's probably some teenagers fresh out of college or something. you know, delivering
pizza. Or they're up to no good that they tainted the pizza and they want to know, look, we just gave Michael food poisoning. We're going to win a game tomorrow night.
See, that's a little sinister to me.
That's what they were implying. That's exactly what they were implying.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Michael ate the whole pizza. By the way, Michael, in all those celebratory shots and in between games, he's drinking beer, smoking cigars, and crushing pizzas at 11 o'clock. It must be nice. Right? And still going out there and getting 40 a night. Just a unbelievable
diet. That was the rock star Chicago Bulls. I mean, Dennis Rodman decided to go WWF, WWE, in the middle of practice. Like, dude, come on, man. You better got jumped on a private jet. I'm going to blow off practice. I ain't even going to tell the coaches. I'm about to go wrestle for some money and have some fun.
And then came out and played his ass off. I mean, he's just an extraordinary guy.
But that goes to show you when people – talk about somebody missing practice and how important practice is and all that sort of stuff. It's like,
what are we talking about?
If I'm a baller, I'm a damn baller. Get out of here.
Yeah, Dennis certainly was. All right, we're just getting started. There's a whole bunch to get into in the last couple of episodes of The Last Dance, 9 and 10 last night on ESPN. And the big question at the end of episode 10 last night, could there have been a seventh championship? We'll get into that next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, guys, so I got a chance to go down to Palm Springs this weekend. Had a little getting a little prep work in for Travis and Ireland Part 2. That is coming up Saturday. Woo. The winner gets another day off, which means that there is a chance that John is going to be sitting in this seat. Well, maybe not this seat. I don't think he's going to come to my house to do it. But the loser of the match has to do a double duty. We did it last time. I was able to get him last time. You can watch hole-by-hole coverage on our social media accounts at ESPN Los Angeles. Thanks to our friends at Travis and Matthew for helping us put that together. They're excited to announce TM Rewards. It's their way of rewarding their customers for their loyalty. Free shipping and returns on all purchases. And you can sign up for that at TravisMatthew.com today. Ireland versus Travis Part 2 coming up on Saturday. You guys ready for another day of Johnny I?
Yeah. You can deliver. You think you can deliver that?
Yeah, I like my chances. I mean, I've been texting a little bit with John. Neither one of us have been playing particularly well, but we'll see. You never know. It's one of those things. But Black Gold coming up on Saturday afternoon at Black Gold. So
why does it sound like an Isaac Hayes soundtrack or something, like a Isaac Hayes movie or Black Gold starring Isaac Hayes?
Black. There you go. Write the movie, LZ. You
got hey, man, Bob.
The script writer. So we saw.
I don't think we're going to have Isaac Hayes out on the course, but go ahead.
Probably not. Probably
God bless
not.
Dude.
God bless so we dude. Got to see it last night towards the very end. We knew, I mean, the whole concept of this is The Last Dance. This is the last time. We know that they only finished with only six titles, the two consecutive three-peats, that they had six championships. And at the beginning of this, Jerry Krause had said, I don't care if they go 82-0, we're not bringing Phil Jackson and some of these other guys back. Well, to hear Jerry Reinsdorf tell it last night, at the very last minute, he did go to Phil Jackson and said, do you want to come and run it back and try to get a seven?
Yeah, at the last minute, but it was already too late. Their minds were already made up. People was like, you know, this is over with. You let them basically for an entire season, 82 games, hang over their head about how things were going to be broken up and you were moving on, and that was it. So when you win, you're sitting back, you're going, damn, we can win seven, huh? What do you think the numbers will look like then? Phil, you want to come back? Like, Phil, no. Like, you never even approached. Like Michael said, you never came to me and said, I got another 30 racks for you. You never went to Pip and said, okay, I'll finally give you 25. You never went to them dudes and never, ever approached them with that. So the fact of the matter is, you by not doing that, you never was going to have the opportunity to get Phil Jackson back to run seven. Phil don't want to – no coach that's winning constant championships with veteran players all of a sudden want to – you know, scrap everything.
Rebuild.
And rebuild? No. Why would you do that? I could go somewhere else and be good. And he did. He came to L.A.
Here's Phil Jackson, or I should say Ramona Shelburne, talking about Phil Jackson, that he was ready to move on no matter what happened in that series against the Jazz.
Phil had just gotten to this place mentally where he just said it was time.
it's not necessarily me and Krause, or can we coexist or anything like that. I think Phil just felt like it really had run its course, like too much blood had been spilled and they had already had all these goodbyes and everybody had, you know, kind of made their peace with it. Plus he knew that Krause wanted to turn over the team. Like there was a lot of free agents that were going to move on. And Phil has this great part in 11 Rings where he talks about one of the Buddhist teachings of like, you know, I know that you can only really transform yourself when you really truly let go. And, you know, you have to just subject yourself to total annihilation over and over and over in order to evolve. And Phil had gotten his head in that place. I think Phil was also really tired. So by the time Reinsdorf came to Phil towards the end of the lockout, Phil was just, you know, there was a no go.
Yeah. So that's just what I said. It's like, it's too late. Like, you've already put this in my head. So now I'm preparing for the next chapter of my life and for the future. And to come back and say, you know how it is, LZ and Travis, when somebody tells you, well, you know, we're going to fold the newspaper next week. And you're like, okay, well, let me, and your mind changes. Well, now I'm going to go work for the New York Times, or I'm going to work for this person. And then they come back and say, well, we don't really want to do that. We just decided to go raise some money and we're going to, it's like, no, dude, I'm cool. Like I'm so far gone now. I'm good.
I view it more as a dysfunctional relationship. Whereas we together and, you know, we're together for the kids and now the kids are grown. Relationship. Because that makes more sense to me.
I think that's
more relatable to people because not everyone's worked in a newspaper, but everyone's been in a relationship.
That's true. Okay.
Thank you. So I would say it kind of reminds me of you keep getting together and breaking up with somebody over and over again. And then one day somebody is really done, like really done. And that's when, you know, and I'm assuming that's where Phil Jackson was at. They were together for the kids. And then, you know, the last graduation happened. And they look at each other like going, you know what? I don't want to keep doing this with you anymore.
But okay,
or the other girl sitting on the other end of the aisle. Which one?
Well, that probably has something to do with it as well. But here's what I don't get, and I get the desire at the end after you've won another championship to say, "Hey, let's try to do it again." I understand where Jerry Reinsdorf was coming for that. What I don't get, what I never understood, going all the way back to episode one, all the way through the end of it last night in episode 10, was, why in the world would an executive like Jerry Krause or an executive like Jerry Reinsdorf allow Jerry Krause to paint the team into a corner like that? To say that I don't care if they go 82-0, we're not running this back. Phil Jackson is not coming back. I understand the desire to try to maybe want to rebuild it on the fly and maybe try to get younger and cheaper. I get it. That's pro sports. But you guys know this. Key, you know it in particular. It is so hard to win in pro sports. It is so hard to win. And they had a formula that not only was winning, but it was winning at a historic level. And you're going to decide to kill it before it's dead? I will never, ever get that part.
I don't know if it was Reinsdorf that was killing it as much as it was Jerry Krause. But
no, Krause wanted to kill it, but Reinsdorf allowed him to kill it. Reinsdorf would have come in earlier and said, hey, Jerry, shut up. If he goes 82-0, of course he's coming back. Be quiet.
But how many owners have I told you in professional sports don't even know about the sport that they own? They just own it because it's a luxury and it's there until
they understand the winning, don't they, Key?
Yeah, but when you start talking about what is the constant thing that Jerry Reinsdorf has said throughout these 10 episodes that you always hear him talking about? Money, 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 money. He's always counting the money. And at the end of the day, his wife, if he had one or not, I don't know, but somebody must have told him, hey, man, y'all winning championships. What are you doing? And then he goes back and he gets Phil and brings Phil back. Then at the end, he tries to bring Michael back. Remember, he flew to Montana, I think it was, to tell Phil to come back the first time around. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's like he has to wait to the end for somebody to shake him and say, man, what are you doing? It's almost like he's an absentee owner and allowing Jerry Krause to run everything. And then in the end, he realizes, well, wait a minute, I need to step in. And he steps in all the time in the end to try and fix it when it becomes too late.
But Jerry Krause was not absentee. Let's be honest, Jerry Krause, I understand. But what I'm saying is that Jerry Krause was boots on the ground. He was there. He was living it. And he knows how hard it is to build a winner. Why would he want to kill it?
But remember, he allegedly had the little man's complex. He wanted to be big baller with the rest of the players. The players disliked him. Even though they respected what he was doing, is how he was going about doing it, much like Scotty said. Like, you get a man credit, but if he was foolish in certain things that he was doing, and he had an ego. You can look at him on some of the clips when they're celebrating. He's just sitting there looking miserable, like, they're not talking about me. You know, it's just one of those deals. They're not talking about me. I can't believe I'm not being mentioned multiple times. And then they'll just throw a little quick. Yeah, and Jerry Krause, and that didn't feel good to him. So the only way he would get that control back is by basically snapping the whip to him, because that was the only thing he could do, is not sign him back, trade him. That was how he would get even with him.
Michael certainly didn't buy it. You know, Michael's contempt for the explanation at the end of the show was obvious. We had a chance to go for 7, and they killed it. You could tell, it's been 20-plus years. He's still angry about it.
He said he was still in his peak. He said he was still in his prime. And I think that's the thing that kills it more than anything. I'm assuming if he had felt that he was on a decline, like legitimately on a decline, the emotions would be different. But because he felt like he was still in his peak and that the rug was taking leaves under him, that's the reason why I think it still carries with him.
Man, he was a baller. I mean, I talk about it all the time. When I go back and I think about what John Gruden did to our team, man, we could have ran off 2 or 3 Super Bowls back to back. We could have been back to back to back. We could have been a team that could have potentially won 3 Super Bowls in a row. That's how strong we was. But all of a sudden, he broke up our entire team. Everybody was gone. From Joe Jefferson to me to Kenny McCardell to Johnny Lynch in Denver to Warren Sapp in Oakland, Brian Kelly in Detroit. Like, he completely dismantled our entire team.
Well,
the MVP of the Super Bowl, they allowed to go sign in Arizona just because he wanted the control of the team, because he came and won the Super Bowl in his first year. And then that standpoint, it was over. The general manager wound up in Atlanta. A year later, we were all gone.
But you look at what Michael said at the end, where Michael said, look, if I would have come back on a 1 year, I was already doing 1 years. Phil would have come back on 1 year had they said something earlier. Steve Kerr would have done it. He went down the list of all the guys that Dennis would have done one more year if he wanted to do one more shot at winning that 7th championship. He said Scotty would have taken some convincing because Scotty needed money, and Scotty was a guy that had felt like he'd been disrespected for a while financially. So you need to work on Scotty. But if I've got 4 of the 5 pieces, and the 5th piece I can probably turn if we just pay the man, I get that egos get involved, but I mean, look at the Bulls. The Bulls haven't been good since. It's been 20, but they haven't put.
They have not been like good that. Since.
No, I mean, not really. Not in a sense to where they're competing for championships. They had the little Derrick Rose run, but that was what, a 2 year window over 20 years.
Yeah,
they haven't been consistently good, but I mean, I'm not going to say Tom Thibodeau's Bulls weren't good. They didn't win a championship, but they were good.
Yeah, but I know what you're saying, Travis. Travis is saying fear. Good Michael Jordan, Chicago Bull, late 80s, 90s good. Not
crazy.
A cup of coffee good.
All right, Cam Newton, or at least with the Chargers, we've been waiting for an answer as to why he's not in L.A. We may have finally gotten it. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, Keith, so you said that the Cam Newton to the Chargers thing was not going to be officially dead until somebody said, you know what, we looked and we decided that we wanted to go in a different direction. You tell me if this qualifies. Anthony Lynn was speaking, and he was asked about the Chargers, and he was asked about Cam Newton and whether or not that's a fit. He said, we absolutely did take a look at that, but we feel really good about the quarterback room that I have. He went on to say, Tyrod Taylor, Easton Stick, those are guys a lot of people don't talk about. Stick was a Division I AA star. He won like three national championships. He's a hell of a leader, hell of a professional. I think he has a bright future in this league one day. But with him, Tyrod Taylor, and knowing that we had an opportunity to get one picking six in the draft, all of those decisions came into play when talking about Cam. So is that it? Are we done? Is Cam not coming to the Chargers? Is that a wrap?
Did Anthony Lynn say we're not interested, or he just said we looked at it and we decided to draft Justin Herbert and move on with the other two guys? Did he say it that way? I mean, it's all in the context in which he says it, the delivery of it, because he still leaves it open a little bit. He didn't say no. He's kind of left it open. And the reason he kind of left it open, I believe, is as you get into seeing people live and then realizing, you know what, maybe if he's still out there, we should still go sign him. Opposed to saying, no, we're not interested in him. See, if he would have said, no, we're not interested in him, and we were not interested in him, that's a different conversation.
So you still think there's an open door?
Well, he said they considered it. He didn't say.
But then he went on to say all the guys that they have that they like and that, quote, Cam's going to be on somebody's roster. He's going to help somebody win a few games.
Was that consideration delivered before the draft? You know what I'm saying? Like, he left it kind of the window open a little bit, although I'm more inclined to say they moved on from him. But he kind of left it open just in case they've got to revisit it by using the word considered. He didn't say we considered him and we decided that he doesn't fit our team. You understand what I'm saying? Like, he left some stuff out that I would like.
That's a pretty narrow. That's a small needle to thread right there. You know what I mean? He's saying
it's a small needle to thread.
We've got Tyrod Taylor. We've got Justin Herbert. And then he goes on for 25 minutes about Easton Stick for some reason that I'm not quite sure about. But it seems like he's
preseason. He can ball a little bit. He was cool in preseason. So I watched him. He's all right.
Look, they drafted a guy sixth overall. He's their quarterback.
No, he's the quarterback of the future. There's no question about it. But you know, how long – you know these things change, though, man. They get into training camp. They haven't seen anybody, right? They get into training camp, and he's not signing. Them coaches are sitting there saying to themselves, same, man, that dude threw 9 picks in 2 days in practice. The hell are we doing? That's what happens. And they sit in as an offensive staff. Then the general manager sits in with them, and they go over personnel, and they go over things, and the quarterback doesn't start to look a certain way, and a Cam Newton is available. You leave that window open right now, opposed to just closing it shut. See, like, who was that closed it shut on Jameis? Oh, the Tampa.
Not Tampa.
It was another team that was like, no, we're not interested in Jameis Winston at all. That's when you – shut the door. But when you say we considered it and didn't really close it, and then you go on to elaborate about other players, it's hard for me to just close the door on him right now.
Does this breathe a little life into a key? Here's another quote from Anthony Lynn. Cam's a tremendous quarterback. He's been an MVP of this league. He's led his team to the Super Bowl, and he's healthy now from what I hear. Cam's going to be on somebody's roster. He's going to help somebody win a few games.
Still means nothing to me. Still, it just doesn't. It doesn't close it yet. It's closing, but it doesn't close it all the way. Somebody's going to help somebody win some games. Just not us. Oh, give me something. Give me something. Because you could be that somebody helps win some games. And then, you know, you leaving yourself wiggle room, because if you got to sign him and you sign him, it'll come back around. Well, I thought you said you wasn't going to sign Cam Newton. Well, I never said that. I said we considered signing him at the time, but then we realized that the COVID-19 thing was in play, so we would never get a chance to put our hands on. You know, all the wiggle room. He's doing coach talk right now. That's all. He's doing
coach speak.
I'm
going to be honest with you. I'm bored. I'm bored, and I'm done talking about Cam. He's a backup quarterback for somebody, and he's not going to be in L.A.
He may not be in L.A. He may be a quarterback for somebody else. Who's to say? I'm just saying he didn't say, we don't want Cam Newton. Like Travis said, you usually go put a fork in it with no problem at all and validate that situation.
You know what he said, we don't want Cam Newton, when they didn't sign Cam Newton? I mean, that's just – I wanted Cam Newton here badly for a variety of reasons. But now I'm just going to accept reality. The NFL does not think he's that dude, and he's going to be a backup, and now he's going to have to try and do what Nick Foles did, which is hopefully get on with a team, get an opportunity with a good team, and make the most of it so that you can start to restart your narrative over again. Because right now, it's pretty clear what the NFL is saying about how they feel about Cam.
Well, I don't think it's clear that the NFL is saying that at all. The NFL is not saying how they feel about Cam Newton. Cam Newton's got to find the right situation that fits for who he is in the
Canada
right
football.
Spot. Yeah, they would take him, I'm sure. You know, because we don't know what Cam is. Expectations are, you know, for all we know, Cincinnati Bengals tried to sign him. We don't know expectations. We have no idea. For all we know, Cam Newton wants $20 million and he wants a 4-year deal. We have no idea. So it has to play out before we start assuming that the NFL just don't want Cam Newton.
I don't think it's a matter of the NFL doesn't want him. I think there probably is something that is unknown at this point, but you wonder too, because I don't want to say it happens every year, but it happens frequently enough where somebody goes down early and all of a sudden you need somebody to step in if Cam's not winning to fill that vacancy. To stand on the sidelines wearing a baseball hat waiting for somebody to play poorly, that seems like a tougher putt for a guy like me. Because I know it's been 5 years, but it's also only been 5 years since he won that MVP award. And to just visualize him standing holding the clipboard, that just seems bizarre to me.
Coach, it's been 2 years since he was playing like an MVP. He had better statistics in before 2018 he got hurt, better statistics than he had in those first half of the season than he had when he was the MVP. So it's not like all of a sudden he forgot how to play football. The right situations and the right circumstances have to come up. That is it and that is all. And we don't know what he wants and we don't know what situation he's looking for. Everybody's assuming that he's looking for X amount. Everybody's assuming he wants to be a starter immediately. We don't know. So it would be very irresponsible for us to continue to keep saying the same thing.
We do know. Cam said that he's open for a backup role. So we do know. The camp has said that he's open to even being a backup. So,
I mean, you can say I'm open to it, and then there's accepting the terms that come along with it. You know what I mean? Like, if you get a deal like Mariota, where you're making roughly $7, $8 million, okay, maybe I can do that. If we're talking a backup role like Jameis Winston's, where you're making $1 million, if I'm Cam Newton, there's I'm open to it, and then there's, yeah, maybe technically I'm open to it, but I still need to get what I want.
Exactly. So you don't really know. Jay Cutler was signed off the streets. Jay Cutler threatened to retire, go to Fox, do all of that. And what happened? The Miami Dolphins lost their quarterback. Hey, Jay, we got $12 million for you, man. You want to come for 1 year to do it? So let it play out. Just let it play out.
You just compared Cam Newton and Jay Cutler, so I did let it play out.
I compared the situation to Jay Cutler's situation. I didn't compare the players, okay? If you do your research and you go online, as you do, look at his numbers in 2018 before he got hurt, and look at his numbers in Super Bowl year.
Key.
That's all I'm trying to tell you.
Key. You cannot tell me that you're going to hold on to 6 or 7 games from 2 years ago.
Absolutely. You're looking at that. You're looking at that.
6 or 7
because that's
games.
Important. And you're looking at that because that's important.
Six or seven games from 2 years ago that were really good
for Cam. That's important.
They weren't a historic pace. They were excellent numbers for Cam six or seven years ago.
You're looking at that when you're evaluating the talent, LZ. That's important.
The Last Dance is in the books. All 10 episodes, the good, the bad, and the what from all 10 of them, coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, the good, the bad, and the what from all 10 episodes of The Last Dance, which concluded last night on ESPN. Just a fantastic docuseries along the way. I'll start with the good, guys. I did not know the backstory of Gus Lett, who, of course, was Michael's security guy, in charge of Michael's security team, both when they were in the United Center, when they were on the road, and then when he got sick, how Michael was involved in his treatment, how Michael went out of his way to get him that game ball at the end of the Indiana series. Obviously, his widow and Michael still have a relationship. This was somebody that was incredibly important to Michael, and I had no idea that guy even existed, much less that Michael had that relationship with him. I thought that was an incredibly touching story.
No, it was. And you can see where Gus's widow was talking about how Michael would confide to him and have conversations, deep conversations with him that he probably wouldn't have with no one else. So that's always a good sign.
It was great. The good, LZ, for you.
The good over the overall series to me is still that moment where Michael's sitting there and he's talking about why he pushes so hard, why he's so driven, why he goes to the guys where he does. And he gets so emotional talking about it years and years later that he has to stop and take a break. Now, I am one of those people who, you know, went to a ton of games early in Michael's career when the Bulls were not good to mediocre. They came through Detroit, or I would be in Chicago. And so I was really fortunate to see Michael before he was fully formed. And to see him in that moment just brought me back to when I was a kid, you know, at the Pontiac Silverdome, way up in the nosebleed section with binoculars trying to say, is that Michael Jordan? And to hear him talk about those moments with the same level of passion, that's, I said it was special to me on the episode when it aired, and it's still very special to me now.
Key.
I would say the good was the fact that Scottie Pippen seemed like he finally, in these last two episodes, got some respect in terms of just everything overall, from coming back from back pain to coming back into the game and contributing in a way that, you know, if you've ever had back issues and tried to perform at a level that as a professional, just imagine how hard it is. But to gut it out, to do those sort of things, it seemed like to me they was giving him that respect. Nobody tried to poop on the situation with his back. Everybody kind of was like, man, his back was killing him.
Couldn't move.
And he couldn't, but he still was out there on the floor when previous episodes, it felt like to a lot of us that they wanted to try to make him out to be something that he wasn't. It's a good production by the production team, the director, the producer, to set it up the way that he set it up. They had everybody on the edge of their seats in the beginning, and then they bring it to the end where now all of a sudden he looks different than you portrayed him in the beginning.
All right, let's move on to the bad, and I'll start here. And I've been saying this all morning, and I'm going to say it again. I just, for the life of me, do not understand the rationale that Jerry Krause had going into that final season. And Jerry Krause looked pretty bad throughout the course of the series. He obviously was a very gifted executive in identifying talent early on. He went and found Scottie Pippen. He went and found Tony Kukoc. He knew that Tracy McGrady was a player, even when he was not playing all that much in the NBA, and knew that he could make a move there if he needed to. But for the life of me, I do not understand why you decide, even before the season has started, when you're looking at a sixth championship in 8 years, when there is no indication that a guy like Michael Jordan wants to stop anytime soon, you have the greatest coach of all time, why you say from the jump, we're not doing this again. It's just a terrible, terrible way to manage. It's a terrible way to motivate. It's just an awful look. And I think that of everybody that we saw in this, there were guys that looked good, there were guys that looked bad, but nobody looked worse than Jerry Krause over the last month and change. Nobody.
Yeah, he took a beating, man. He sure did. He took, yeah. Yeah, supposedly there's a biography coming out that maybe, you know, cleans up some things from his perspective. And certainly when you see Dennis Rodman jetting off to do some wrestling stuff in the middle of the postseason, Scottie Pippen can't walk for stretches and he's going to want a whole lot of money, you can understand why he didn't want to become the Boston Celtics of the 90s. But you certainly don't show your hand at the beginning of the season and then repeat it throughout the course of the season.
But even if he became the Boston Celtics of the 90s, that's fine. You win another chip.
What did Michael say? Michael said they can't get rid of us until they beat us. He said that, why not? I get it. I get that maybe it's not a great business move, but you've won six of your last eight. Don't you want somebody to have to beat you before you kill it yourself? I'll just never understand. I'll never get that.
Have you ever played pickup and like run a court for a little bit, Travis?
Sure.
You know that feeling when you know you really can't play one more, but because you've been winning, you're just going to do one more, and then you get blown out?
So get the blowout. I'm okay with the blowout.
Nobody really wants that blowout. And as soon as the blowout happens, you say to yourself right away, damn, I should have just went on home.
Michael was not going home, for sure. What's your bad, LZ?
Key. LZ?
Oh, Key, okay. I'm sorry.
My bad is I didn't realize how bad of a pass that entry pass was from John Stockton to Karl Malone towards the final play in game six. I thought for sure Michael came out of nowhere and got the steal.
No, he did not. He passed it to him.
Michael was standing right there.
He thought his back was turned. He thought Michael went with his dude, but Michael never.
I'm talking about Stockton. Stockton can see
You must be talking about a different play then, because the one at the end, the one that he stole was behind. Yes. His back was turned.
John Stockton's facing him. I'm saying the pass. John Stockton is looking. You can clearly see Michael Jordan did not go with his man, but he fed Carmelo.
I'm confused.
Anyway.
I don't know which one you're talking about, because the last play, when he passed the ball, when he got the steal. Yeah, it looked like what Michael did is he baited Stockton. He baited him because he knew he was giving it to Malone. He looked as though he was going to roll on the baseline with his guy, and he stopped right underneath the basket once it was inbounded.
That's a different play.
All right.
Stockton still had the ball. You can clearly see Mike is standing there underneath the basket, and he tosses him the ball anyway, and he set up Karl Malone to fail.
Keith, you're bad.
Well, I mean, it's a good and a bad, I guess you want to call it. It's a good thing because it's who Dennis Rodman was, and it's a bad thing because he decided to go wrestle in the middle of the championship. That's why it's a good and a bad. It's good because that's what Dennis do, and that's who he is, and you got to accept it. But at the bad part of it, it's like, for last thing I'm going to be doing, man, in the middle of the champ, we're not talking about the regular season where I'm taking 3 or 4 days off because we got 82 games. We got two damn games left, man. The hell are you doing? Anything could have went wrong. The hell's wrong with him?
Well, where'd you like to start? There's a whole another 10-part series on Dennis Rodman. I'm sure we'll get at some point. Let's move very quickly to our what the heck was that? The woman behind the Bulls bench F-bombing the Bulls at the top of her lungs. I understand there are bad people. There are bad fans, and maybe a lot of them are my people, Key. But that looked like somebody's mother who was just screaming up or just standing up screaming the F-word at the top of her lungs at anybody who walked by her.
Oh, no, that's somebody's mother. That's somebody's mother. Now she's somebody's grandmother, and they got to see that clip.
Well, that was my what the hell was that? So, LZ, your what?
My what is Brian Russell.
Oh, man, leave B alone.
I don't care if Michael Jordan's in a wheelchair. You don't talk smack to Michael damn Jordan ever, ever. The fact that Mike remembered that encounter from this no-name rookie and had been waiting for this moment is hilarious to me. It's psychotic, but it's also hilarious. But the fact that B. Russ thought he could talk smack to Mike at any point ever. Now, he did get pushed. I don't care what they say. He did get pushed.
Now, his momentum was going. Smack. His momentum was going the other way.
Come on, man. Don't do the yokey doke.
His momentum was going the wrong. His momentum was going that way. So when your momentum's already going that way, and I put my hand slightly on your hip, it's going to push you. That's what happens. No. I can show you exactly how to run a route, Travis, and you get open every single time.
No, I can't. I can't. I can.
Yes, you
walk.
Can. Because if I put my hand right on your hip when you already going that way, and I give you just a nudge, you gonna fly. But anyway,
Key, your what was what?
What the hell was MJ doing taking pizza at 1 o'clock in the morning from a bunch of people?
He was hungry.
Well, first of all, I'm gonna send my security out to get the pizza and bring it back. Because I don't want any contamination, nor do I want people coming to my room trying to get a sneak peek of what I'm doing. So I got 5 dudes. Y'all, one of y'all go get the damn pizza. Find a 24-hour Kentucky Fried Chicken something. I mean, room service is closed. Get the damn manager to open up room service.
They said nothing was open. They said nothing was open.
By the way, I believe them that nothing was open in Salt Lake
City. Oh, God, yeah, nothing was open.
It's got to be something open in Salt Lake City.
No. I lived in that area. Trust me.
Burger King?
And in the 90s, nothing.
Michael's dietary habits are pretty great. I like everything about that. I can certainly relate to that. All right, you mentioned it. Brian Russell and the shot, and Brian Russell saying something to Michael while he was being a baseball player. Will they ever learn? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.